It's good to see everyone this morning. We're going to try to continue our study on faith this morning. I've got a lot to try to cover this morning, so I'm not going to do a big review, but basically what we're talking about is faith. We talked about the definition of faith from Hebrews, and we looked at James and saw that there is a difference in faith and works. They go together, but faith is active. And then we look at 2 Peter 1 through 5. Let me get the verse right before I misquote it. 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 5, where you add to your faith, virtue, knowledge, so on. And we see there that we can build our faith. We add to our faith different aspects. We can build those. We can consciously build on those things. And as long as we're working from this book or your version of it, our faith is going to grow. So where we were last, we talked about faith building trust. So the more our faith the more we build up our faith, the more we can trust. The more we see how trust manifests itself, the more our faith grows. We moved from there and we started talking about courage. So we talked about the definitions, mental or moral strength to venture, persevere, or withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. And mark that word fear because we're going to try to get into that today. Talked about fear a little bit, and we're going to talk about that some more, but to have reverential awe, like having fear of God, that is in the scriptures a number of times, the fear of God. What is that? Do we need to walk around being scared to death that God is going to strike us with a bolt of lightning? I don't believe that's what it's saying, but we do need to have respect for God, and we do need to have respect for his power, and I believe that's what that's talking about there. The other definition of fear is an unpleasant, there were two definitions. It was listed twice in the Wagner's. An unpleasant, often strong emotion caused by anticipation or awareness of danger. This is the definition of fear that we are most commonly associate with. It can get to the point of terror, a state of intense fear, one that inspires fear. So a lot of times, and the reason I'm mixing the fear in with the courage is because a lot of times we associate overcoming fear with having the courage. If you see all the war movies, you read about Medal of Honor winners, having the courage to face the fear. So Hebrews 11, let's go to Hebrews 11 and we'll start here this morning. Hebrews 11, starting in verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe, and believe when she had received the spies with peace. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak, Samson, Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And then verse 39 says, and all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. So this scripture is describing over six men and Rahab that had faith, and through their faith they had the courage to defeat all of these things. Violence of fire, the sword, weakness were made strong. They were valiant in battle. They turned to flight the armies of the aliens. And then even after that, there were others that had trials of mockings and scourgings and chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two. They had the faith, they had the courage, or they had the faith, they had the trust, and developed the courage to face those. And if you think those things are not fearful or something to fear, I can't imagine much other things that would be more fearful than that right now. I want to focus on Gideon, and I said I don't want to do character studies, but I think looking at Gideon, and David talked about Gideon last week, talked about him a little bit this morning. I'd like to look at Gideon, because we think of Gideon as somebody that had great faith, they had great courage, they put the armies to flight with just a few hundred. But as you read the story of Gideon, I think you see that in the very beginning, Gideon really didn't have much faith. I think his faith was built upon. I think he had doubts. I think he had questions. And I think the Lord worked with him because the Lord had a plan for him. And let's start in Judges chapter 6. In Judges chapter 6 and verse 1, and this is, we see that the Israelites are in, and David had it on the chart up there. They had 7 years of being in captivity again. They were on that cycle, you know. They're in God's graces. They decide they can do it on their own. In God's graces, they fall away. The children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. Okay, so they're on the downhill slide again. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel because of the Midianites. The children of Israel made for themselves the dens, the caves, and the strongholds which are in the mountains. So it was whenever Israel had sown, Midianites would come up, also Amalekites, and the people of the east would come up against them. Okay? So these people would come in, they'd take all the grain, all of the food that Israel had grown that year. They were in fear. They were hiding in caves. They had made themselves strongholds in the mountains, but basically they were in hiding. Go down to verse 7, and it came to pass when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord because of the Midianites. Here we are again. We're on the downhill slide. It's about as bad as it looks like it's going to get. And they come to their senses and they cry out for the Lord. That the Lord sent a prophet to the children of Israel who said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you out of the house of bondage. And I delivered you out of the house, out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all who oppressed you and drove them out before you and gave you their land. Also I said to you, I am the Lord God, the Lord your God. Do not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But you've not obeyed my voice. So God's reminding them why they're in the position that they're in. All right. In verse 11, now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiramite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. So Gideon is threshing the wheat in a place you wouldn't expect to look for him. He was hiding from the Midianites. He was trying to thresh the wheat and provide some food. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. And Gideon said to him, O my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? Where are all his miracles? Whenever things get bad for us, do we not have a tendency sometimes to say, Lord, where are you? You know, I serve you. I love you. Where are you at? And where are all of his miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? And now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. All right? So then the Lord turned to him and said, Go in this might of yours. He's again telling Gideon, hey, you're a man of valor. You've got the might. You've got the ability. And you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? So right here, God is telling Gideon, have faith. You can do this. Have I not sent you? Have I not called you and am sending you out to do this? Then Gideon says, Oh, my Lord, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. Kind of reminds you of David a little bit. But Gideon still, the Lord just told him, I'm sending you out. I am with you. I have sent you. And Gideon says, you know, different than David. David had the confidence to go out. You know, David was like, you know, who is this guy to dishonor our God? You know, Gideon's saying, wait a minute, you got the wrong guy. And the Lord said to him, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man. Then he said to him, if now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who talk with me. Do not depart from here, I pray, until I come to you and bring my offering and set it out before you. So Gideon is willing to believe, all right, but he wants a little bit of proof. He's kind of like Thomas. He wants that evidence. And instead of just having faith, he needs a little bit to kind of bolster him up here. So Gideon went and prepared his offering. He came back. And the angel of the void of the Lord, I'm at verse 21 now, put out the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire rose out of the rock and consumed the meat. And the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. Now Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord. So Gideon said, alas, O Lord God, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. Okay? So now Gideon is at least convinced that that was really the Lord talking to him. Okay, we're going to see he's still not 100% sure, but after this, it came to pass the same night that the Lord said to him, take your father's young bull, the second bull of 7 years old, and tear down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the wooden image that is beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God on top of this rock in the proper arrangement, and take this second bull and offer a burnt sacrifice. So Gideon took 10 men from among his servants and did as the Lord had sent him. But because he feared his father's household and the men of the city too much to do it by day, he did it by night. So Gideon still, okay, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it my way a little bit. I'm going to do it at night because I'm still scared. Okay? He has got to the point where he has enough faith and he's built up enough courage to do what the Lord has asked, but he's still just a little bit unsure. When the men of the city arose early in the morning, there was the altar of Baal torn down, and the wooden image that was beside it was cut down, and the second bull was being offered on the altar which had been built. So they said to one another, "Who has done this thing?" And when they inquired and asked, they said, "Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing." Then the men of the city said to Joash, "Bring out your son that he may die, because he has torn down the altar of Baal, and because he has cut down the wooden image that was beside it." But Joash said to all who stood against him, "Would you plead for Baal? Would you save him? Let the one who would plead for him be put to death by morning. If he is a god," talking about Baal, "let him plead for himself, because his altar has been torn down." So Joash does the right thing. He says, so obviously there was some knowledge of God left there somewhere, but he says to the men that want to put Gideon to death, okay, and you think, you know, Gideon's already kind of scared. He's kind of sneaking around doing this. It just seems to me like Gideon would be really scared now, okay? But the Lord delivers him. He affects his father Joash to say, "Hey, if Baal's a god, let him fix it." Well, so then all the Midians and Amalekites, the people of the east, gathered together, and they crossed over and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. So they tore down the altar, and then some time has passed here, I think, and the Midianites and Amalekites are coming together again. So let me catch up here. He tore down the altar, and then we're going to get into the wool fleece sign now. Go over to verse 36. Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand, as you've said," he's still questioning God. He's still saying, "Okay, at least I believe you now. I know you're God. I know you're talking to me. But if you're going to do this, I need a sign." And he said, "I'm going to put a piece of a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only and is dry on the ground, then I'll know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you've said." And, of course, you know, the next morning, the fleece was wet and the ground was dry. But verse 39, Gideon said to God, "Do not be angry with me, but let me speak just once more. Let me test, I pray, just once more with the fleece. Now let it now be dry only on the fleece, but on the ground it would be dew." And God did so that night. This tells me that Gideon is still having some doubt. He's still questioning God. He's still asking him for proof, for evidence, kind of like Thomas did. But through all of this, Gideon's faith becomes stronger. And one of the things that I think we should learn from this is that we should have obedience, even despite our doubts. Faith means believing in things that we haven't seen. It's the evidence, it's the substance of things not seen. Some things that God does, or especially back then, you say, "How did he do that?" They were miracles. And we don't see those just out. We don't see people raised from the dead. We don't see some of the miracles in the same form, because I believe some miracles still happen. But we don't see them in exactly the same form, just shock and awe, like they did then. If we have doubts about our abilities, and if we have doubts about God's plan for us, we need to follow through. That obedience, despite the doubt. and God's strength in our weakness. When you have the faith, the trust, the courage, we're going to overcome our own weaknesses, our own doubts, especially in ourselves, through God's strength. He often uses the humble and unlikely to accomplish his purposes. Our weakness can become a platform for God's strength and glory. In Judges 7:20, flip over a page to that. Then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers. They held the torches in their left hands and trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and they cried, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon," and every man stood in his place all around the camp, and the whole army ran and cried out and fled. Then the 300 blew their trumpets. The Lord set every man's sword against his companion throughout the whole camp, and the army fled to Beth Acacia towards someplace over by Temple, as far as the border of Abel Meholah by Tabith. So God used, who in their right mind would believe that if I march around the city seven times and blow these trumpets, that the walls are going to fall down? Who would believe that? But Gideon's faith had grown to the point where he knew that God was going to do what God said he was going to do. To the point that God convinced, that Gideon convinced everybody else to follow through with the same plan. All right? One thing I want you to look at, though, and this is crucial to our faith. Look at Judges 7, verses 13 through 15. And when Gideon had come, there was a man. Okay, this is the setting here is Gideon has asked once again for God to show him some proof that they're going to be victorious. And he takes a servant. And they sneak down, and they're listening to the people in the camp. And when Gideon had come, there was a man telling a dream to his companion. He said, "I have had a dream. To my surprise, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian. It came to a tent and struck it so that it fell and overturned, and the tent collapsed." Then his companion answered and said, "This is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand God has delivered Midian and the whole camp." Okay, so there's Gideon's proof. This guy's had a dream. The other guys interpreted it. This is what God sent him down there to hear. Verse 15, "And so it was when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation." You read so many stories of this, and this phrase is overlooked. When Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation, that he worshiped. Right then, the way I take this, he worshiped. He thanked God right then. You know, Saul would go down and he would take matters into his own hands. Gideon worshiped God at this news. Too many times we our faith, our trust, our courage, we're obedient even despite our doubt, but then when everything comes out okay, who did it? Huh? Todd did that. No, it's never Todd. It's never you that does these things. It's God. And we have to remember to worship him in our successes. All right? Okay, so this journey from fear to faith and the courage it instills in him reminds us that God can work through our doubts and weaknesses, just like he did with Gideon. When we submit to his will and trust in his strength, we overcome obstacles. And Gideon shows us that God's presence and power are with us, even in our moments of uncertainty. To me, this was a journey from fear to faith. So, for a little bit of discussion here, how does our faith grow our courage? Anybody? How does having faith, how do you believe that that helps your courage? JR?
Here's God, and is kind of searching for the evidence through the fleece and those things, but then even... And I think that was God's message to him. When he goes down to that camp and he hears that story relayed, God had that message relayed to him, and he hears God's intentions again. And he's even in control of what the Midianites are thinking. And he believes God. He believes these messages he's hearing. And that seems to finally give him the courage to go back and go, all right, boys, here we go. Get your pots, get your trumpets. God's going to do exactly what he said he's done. I've heard him say it. Let's go execute.
Okay. I think that's a very good example. And I liked your word. It's simplistic. It's simple. When God gives us the faith, when we build our faith, we're going to have the courage to do things. We're not going to have to march around Bryan 7 times and the buildings fall down. But how much courage does it take to take the opportunity to talk about God to somebody tatted up with metal in their face and kind of scary looking? How much courage does that take? I submit it takes just about as much courage to do that as it did to march around Jericho 7 times. Because we're out of our comfort zone. We're not in control. And I'll get into that a little bit more. I'm getting ahead a little bit. Okay, so how does our courage grow our faith? What?
Then we know that God will do what he said he's going to do. So we believe that he will do what he says he will do.
I think that's exactly the point. As we build our faith, as we add to our faith knowledge, or add to our faith virtue, knowledge, so on and so on, and our faith grows, we become more courageous. And as we become more courageous and we see what God can really do, that builds our faith even more. It just becomes a do loop, and it's great.
Overcomes fear. And with the overcoming of fear, you can grow in knowledge, love, courage. All of that is added.
You're about two slides ahead of me. But I'm going to stop for a second and make an editorial comment. What I've seen from this class, and I told David, you know, I'm not sure how to, I'm just going to get up and do, if I was teaching at work or something. But it seems like I was real worried about, am I going to head this class down the path that I'm trying to, the points I'm trying to make. Perfect example. I'm trying to go from trust to courage to fear, and y'all are ahead of me. So let's try to move on a little bit. We kind of answered this question. How does the world see our faith and the courage it brings to us? Whenever we are courageous enough to show our faith to other people, then the world's going to see that. And they're going to ask questions. And we got to have enough courage to answer those questions. John 15:13. To me, this is the ultimate test of our courage. And most of y'all can probably recite this, but John chapter 15 and verse 13 says, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. So you take that, just that verse completely out of context, take it for that. And What does that bring to mind? John Wayne? I mean...
The next day.
Why you're clicking ahead of me too. But yes. Jesus ultimately gave his life for us. And I think whenever we think about John 15:13 by itself, you know, you're thinking about Medal of Honor winners that just face certain death sometimes. And I don't know why they've been coming up on Marketplace, but when I don't do Facebook, but I do Marketplace. And when I click on Marketplace, these maybe I'm in Facebook, I don't know, but these little stories come up, and there's been a lot of Medal of Honor winners coming up on my Facebook lately. Maybe because I read them when they come up. But you sit here and you think about these things. There was one in, I think, the Texas Co-op about a Medal of Honor winner that from down around San Antonio. And when you read the accounts of what these people have done, you just say, I don't think I could do that. It's just amazing. But to Wyatt's point, Hebrews 9:26, if you'll read over there to that verse, he then would have had to suffer once since the foundation of the world, but now once in the end of the ages, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. When you put those two verses together, you understand that there's no greater love that Jesus Christ, as a man, could have for us. He came here as a man. He was deity, but he came here as a man, and he suffered as a man. He suffered the pain. He suffered through all of those things, the beatings. How much faith and courage must this have taken for Christ to die willingly? I told Nicole this out in the hall. David made a comment about having lost their fathers here recently. And I remember a couple years ago when my mom died, and Brent said, boy, you've set a standard. Now we're going to have firework displays every time somebody's parent dies. But it was on the day, it was on July 3rd, and we were going to have our 4th of July party. She passed away in the afternoon, and to David's point, we were surrounded by love. I was in a fog. I was in a panic. And I get there, and all these people have shown up, and it's ready. And I don't have to do anything. But think about, in the context of Hebrews 9:26, if that's the way we feel, that the world just doesn't care, the world doesn't pay attention, think about how God must feel. When he sent his only son to die for us, for our sins, to save the world, and these pews are not full on Sunday. I guarantee you Lake Bryan's pretty full. Yes, sir?
Back to your verse in John 15, greater love has no one than this, to lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. Romans 5:8 tells us that while we are sinners, we're yet sinners. He died for us. Technically, Jesus died for people that were not his friends. He died for his enemies. They put him to death. We are not his friends if we are ignoring his love and his commands. And what an amazing concept. We can pretty much relate laying our life down for somebody that we have a mutual relationship with. Jesus did it for his enemies.
Because he loved us.
I'm sorry?
What was that verse again?
Romans 5:8, while we were yet sinners.
Okay.
And you know, we put the concept of friends like we look as friends, but it's a godly love that he loves us. He loves all souls.
And to your point, he did that for us when we weren't his friends. His death is what allows us to be baptized and to be saved and to join him in heaven. Okay. So also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. So in my muddled mind, and I don't exactly have a scriptural reference for this, but as I'm going through this, trying to make sense of this for myself, when you add to your faith virtue, your birth to virtue knowledge, that's that trust part, okay? This is what the Bible, so it's like Gideon. This is God speaking to me. This is the scriptures. I know what they say. I've built up to trust in them. To knowledge, self-control, to self-control, perseverance, to perseverance, godliness. That's that courage part. It takes courage. It takes discipline. We were talking about losing weight out there. And Tim was giving his what he's been doing. The last thing he said was, you do all this, and then you do it. It takes courage. And think about the courage it takes to do that and how many of us fail at that and how much courage it really takes sometimes to serve God. So we get into the trust, then the courage, to perseverance, godliness, to godliness, brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness, love. Having the courage to love your brethren, despite or in spite of the fear. All right. I'm not going to make it again, but we are going to start on fear. So the way I've got these in my mind, you build the trust gives you courage, and then you can put away the fear. And the fear, to me, is the cancer that eats at all of us, okay? That fear, that not having the knowledge of what's going to happen, that not being in control. We're beings that God gave us a brain. I tried to knock mine out this weekend, but and luckily I didn't. But I've got 6 staples in my head. That's the question, the reference. The fear of not being in control, of not being able to, of having to rely on somebody. You know, if I'm relying on David for something, I pretty well trust and pretty well have faith that David's going to come through. But David's just a man. What if he physically, or what if there's something that prevents him from coming through for me? God's not that way. The fear that I would have, or the doubt, or the distrust, or the can David do this or can't David do this? Sometimes we reassign that to God. Does he care? Will he care? We're going to get into that in just a second. Have reverential awe. We looked at these a few minutes ago. Terror and then torment. So we looked at terror and then we looked at torment. And torment comes from 1 John 4:18, and that's going to be the culmination of this. So we're going to build to 1 John 4:18 through our discussion of fear. All right. Now, I told y'all I've taken a lot of pieces from a lot of different things. The School of Christ that Jacob wrote has got a chapter in here about letting go of fear. I could not get away from just going through this chapter, because he lays it out for me. He just lays it out plain and simple. I'm still afraid, and I still don't have doubts if I can do all this, but let's start in Mark chapter 4. Let's just stop at 20 till or a quarter till? 45, okay. So we'll set the scene and talk about this, and then we'll finish this up, I promise, next week. So Mark chapter 4, starting in verse 40. We're going to start at verse 35. On the same day when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was. And the little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Why are you so afraid? The storm is intense. These guys were afraid. They were in mortal danger. The boat was going to fill. It was going to capsize. They were all going to drown. You know, you would have thought that as sailors, fishermen, they would have known how to handle that. But they didn't. They feared. And they said and they woke Jesus up. And, you know, I almost can read a little bit, and I know Jesus was perfect, but I can almost read just a little bit of irritation here. "You know, you're going to wake me up from my nap for this? Why are you afraid? Where is your faith?" They woke him basically with a rebuke. "Don't you care? Christ, you're sitting there sleeping, and we're all fixing to die, and you're not doing anything about it. You know, at least get up and help us bail water out or something." It's hard to say at this point whether they turned to Christ as an act of faith. "Hey, save us here. We know you can do it." Or as an act of desperation because they're in danger. If you would, before next week, read Mark 4, read back over 35 through 40, and kind of put yourself in that scene and think about if you were one of the apostles in that boat, how you would be feeling as far as the weather, as far as Christ seeming not to care, as far as what Christ did to solve it for us. And we'll discuss that